What is going on, Tan and J-Man Show Nation? It is Monday night, April 27th. You're listening or watching the episode of the Tan and J-Man Show. And if you're listening or watching, you probably don't realize, or you're probably realizing this is not the Tan or the J-Man on this show today. filling in, reaching into the deep into the bullpen, at least for me anyways. I'll be your co-host tonight, Evan Webb. And obviously we've got Mr. Eric Lee, regular on the show at this point. How's it going tonight, Eric?
It's going well. Evan, yourself?
I guess we'll see here how this show goes.
Well, they've run the JV now for 8 years. They finally got to the varsity.
Finally, yeah. So as we were talking on offline before we started, it's like, you know, usually if I have to be on the show, usually my bread and butter is between about, I'd say, November to April, beginning of April anyways. And it's always when I remember I'm on the show to help out. It's always April to about August when I know the least about what's going on in the sports world. So we'll see how this show goes.
Yeah. I'm the same.
Yeah. But before we get into it, I want to make sure everybody knows that the Tan and J-Man Show is brought to you by Dreddy's Place and Arlington Public House. Dreddy's Place, small town vibe, big time flavor. Dreddy's Place serves up fresh breakfast and lunch favorites that keep you coming back for more. Located at 701 Main Street in Rochester. Arlington Public House, upscale cuisine and cocktails with a casual atmosphere, located at 703 Main Street in Rochester. And I was trying to find their, I lost it here, but their weekend specials. When's the last time you were able to make a trip over there, Eric?
Oh, it's been a couple weeks ago. We eat lunch in at Giretti's a lot.
Yeah.
But we are going this Friday. I think it was a party of 28 people. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah.
Really a party. Yeah.
I hope I get served first. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, on their Facebook, looks like they've got a new weekend special, which is the Marry Me Chicken Pasta, which is described as a creamy, rich, and full of flavor. Tender chicken tossed in a garlic parmesan cream sauce with sun-dried tomatoes, all served over perfectly cooked pasta. They've never had this one before, and trust them, it's a must-try. It's the kind of dish that keeps you coming back for another bite and maybe even another order. They're open from 4 p.m. and come in and order online.
Yeah, might try that.
Yeah. Well, we've got there has been a lot. Obviously, they didn't have a show last week, but there's been quite a few things that have happened in the sports world. Most notably, this last weekend was the 2026 NFL draft, which I don't know about you. I don't know if it was maybe just because there wasn't any Purdue guys that were expected to be drafted, or that the fact that for my team, the Bears, they didn't have a top 10 pick, it felt like. So I was pretty checked out of the draft. I kind of forgot it was even happening until about Thursday after it started.
Right.
And I ended up was able to actually, I timed it pretty perfectly where I turned on the TV right when the Bears are getting ready to pick. But obviously for the state, it was pretty big where Fernando Mendoza was. I mean, there was really no surprise him going number one out of IU to really cap off just another unbelievable year that he and the program down in Bloomington had, going to the Raiders. But it just felt like outside of that, there wasn't like there was a it was like a the best draft. I don't know what your thoughts were going into.
Yeah, they depending who you listen to, they're saying there were probably 16 to 18 players that had first round potential.
Yeah,
so they thought it was a somewhat deep draft, but not a lot of star potential.
Yeah,
universally, it seems like the number one guy. Not the number one position, you know, that's obviously quarterback, but the number one guy was this Jeremiah Love from Notre Dame. And we unfortunately got to watch him play three or four times, and his backup would always run a 100-yard kickoff, and he got drafted in the first round. So,
yeah.
If you're a running back in high school right now, you're probably thinking, I need to go to Notre Dame.
Yeah. It was actually funny because when I turned on the draft – I was driving the Bears picked, and then shortly after that was when Omar Cooper from Indiana got picked to the Jets. And right when I turned it on, or when I had it on, they showed a highlight of him against Purdue, and my wife, an IU grad, kind of joked to me saying, oh, there's Purdue, they made a highlight. Like, it might be the only time you make the highlight. And I was like, actually, they might have the most highlights out of any team on the draft because so many people had so many good games against them over the last couple of years.
Well, I looked at today, the 32 first-rounders, Purdue played 11 of them.
Wow.
So might be very much the reason why a lot of these kids are in the first round. They played the Boilers this year. So, and one of them, Thieneman, who got drafted by the Bears, of course, he did play at Purdue. He was great as a freshman. I thought he was pretty mediocre as a sophomore.
I agree.
And then he went to Oregon and obviously tested off the charts at the combine. Very fast jumps. I have a good friend of mine that was a basketball coach at the high school he attended, and he actually coached his two brothers in basketball who played for Purdue, and was just telling me what a workout fiend this kid was. He was a good basketball player, but didn't want to quote unquote waste his time because he knew he was going to be an NFL football player, and that was his dream, and he made it come true.
Yeah. So he was a kid that when he committed to Purdue, obviously we knew the family as a Purdue fan. But then there was he committed under Brohm.
Yeah.
And then obviously Brohm leaves for Louisville, and in comes Ryan Walters. And like Ryan started bringing in a bunch of these, you know, portal guys and transfer guys. And I thought, like, man, I'm not even sure this kid's even going to see the field. I mean, like, there are thoughts of him potentially as a freshman, but he was definitely the better out of his three brothers, or out of his two other brothers. Only one to really get a scholarship out of high school. And lo and behold, he starts from the get go and is described as the fastest kid on the field. And he showed it. We broke Purdue's interception record as a freshman. It was a freshman, just a season record.
It was a freshman record. Yeah. Six, I believe.
Yep. Was a third team All American as a freshman. Led the team in interceptions that year. And then, like I said, had a pretty mediocre sophomore year.
Yeah.
Just obviously the team was way worse than they were the year before. But even then, like when he would on the field, like he'd get, I feel like he got run over a ton by opposing running backs or receivers. And, but then obviously he goes to Oregon as a first team All-American, which I didn't even realize he was a first team All-American. I just wasn't paying attention to him all, I guess, all that much, but I never felt like I was hearing about him, like you would some of these other guys, especially at Ohio State. But yeah, the Bears wanted speed on their defense, and they sure as heck got it.
Yeah. And I think he returned punts a little bit as a freshman. He might be.
Yes, he did.
I doubt if the Bears would use him in that capacity. I'm sure they have somebody else to do that.
Yeah, they drafted another kid. I'm blanking on his name, but they drafted a kid in the early rounds that is supposedly was going to be a kickoff specialist or return specialist. But in the first round was dominated for the first time since, I think, 2016 by the Big Ten. At least not a non-SEC conference.
Right.
But then it felt like definitely showed that the Big Ten had the top-heavy talent, but the SEC dominated from then on out, I think, from a total draft standpoint. Which isn't totally uncommon.
Well, I think the Big Ten had 10 of the 32, and I wrote down the SEC had 7, Big 12 6, and ACC 6, so – looking at it that way, 29 of the 32 kids picked in the first round were in the four major conferences. And then, of course, Notre Dame had two. Yeah. So that's 31. And there was a kid from San Diego State. So,
yeah, I thought that was just kind of a broader conversation of, like, I think just even the whole draft in general, like showing the amount of kids that weren't drafted from non-Power 5 schools. Or even lower than that, just showing what the portal's done to some of these schools, to where they just don't have the top end talent like they used to have.
If you're a good football player and that you don't get picked by one of these Power 4 schools, you go to a little bit smaller level, and the next thing you know, you go up. Same things happen in basketball too. So it's differentiating who's or the Joes and the pros. That's for sure.
Right. Who were some of your it's so hard to tell at this point, but I guess, like, just from a, 30,000 foot view, winners and losers of the draft, or even just maybe just the winners from a team standpoint.
Well, it's easy to always call the winners the teams that end up getting three first rounders or two, it looked, just from a guy who watches football, but like the Giants and the Cowboys did real well. Browns and Jets seem to do well, but those two organizations seem to always do well on draft day, and then it all goes to pot. So who knows?
Yeah, they're so dysfunctional.
Right. And then it always seems like Buffalo and San Francisco always trade down. But yet both those teams are always right there. So I don't, when you have the 28th pick, if you don't think there's, because you have to pay these first rounders, first round money. Mm-hmm. The thing I was hearing that today, this Jeremiah Love is guaranteed $52 million over the next 4 years, which already makes him the highest paid running back.
I did football. See that. Yeah. Which is crazy. So Kenneth Walker just won a Super Bowl.
Yeah. So, you know, do you want to spend that much money on a running back? You know, if he is the best player in the draft, it makes sense. Now, last year we saw the Raiders take this Genty kid from Boise State, mm-hmm. had no line, no quarterback, yeah. and had no room.
Yeah.
You know, and right now Jacoby Brissett is the Cardinals quarterback as of this minute.
Right.
I think Gardner Minshew's his backup, and we've all seen Gardner play too. I mean, he's a good, they're both good backups.
Yeah.
So now Cardinals do have, you know, Marvin Harrison Jr. sitting mm-hmm. out there, and then they got a great tight end. So maybe they're building something. We'll have to see, but you know, he's still gonna need a line, but those are the teams I kind of thought won. I thought the Bears did okay. I've been hearing mixed reviews on them. They got a center from Iowa, and if you're going to get a center from anywhere, you go get Iowa linemen.
Yeah. Yeah, coming into the draft, the biggest thing I was always reading just from Bears beat writers or bloggers or podcasters was like, dude, the trenches are what's needed, and then just really any defense, just because their defense last year, if they weren't causing turnovers, they were pretty
– right.
Pedestrian is probably being generous. And so obviously they got Thieneman off the get go, which is great for the safety for the backfield. You got the lineman you got the center from Iowa. But then they took a tight end in the third round, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah.
Especially because he's not a receiving tight end typically. He's a blocking tight end, which I think they played 12 personnel more than anybody in the NFL last year, or at least one of the teams that played the most. And so obviously when you're playing two tight ends, you need someone to spell one of them, but that was a head scratcher for me. And they, one of the things they people kept saying that he was an edge rusher, and they didn't really take a edge rusher until late in the draft. So
right.
Not someone you think that he'll be a, you know, day one impact guy, but I mean, I guess in year one of Ben Johnson, I think he earned a little leeway. So I guess we'll see what happens.
I did hear a guy today. It was Matt Hasselbeck, who was a quarterback in the NFL for 18 years. And they asked him who they thought would be the surprise, you know, pick in the NFL draft. And he said that kid that tied in that the Bears got.
Okay.
He said he's, you know, Andrew Luck just raves over him. And it didn't seem like a position of need since they have the Loveland and Komet.
Yeah.
But Hasselbeck said he thinks the Bears would go to the 13 personnel more.
Oh, okay.
And so who knows? I'd never heard of him.
Me neither.
You know, so Stanford game start at 10 o'clock on TV or whatever. So, yeah.
The interesting tidbit I saw about the Bears was that they were the only team between 2019 and 2025 to not take a defensive player in the first round.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because in 2019 they didn't have a second round pick because that was from the Khalil Mack trade, but they took David Montgomery in the third round. 2020 they had no first round pick, but they took Cole Kmet in the second round. 2021 they took Justin Fields at pick 11. 2022 they didn't have a first rounder, but they did take Kyler Gordon in the second round, so that's a defensive player, but it's not in the first round. 2023 they took Darnell Wright, a lineman, at pick 10. 2024 was obviously Caleb Williams and Rome Odunze, and then last year was Colston Loveland. So and then this year finally they got Dylan Thieneman. So
yeah. And they have hit on a few of those. Obviously, yeah. Justin Fields one, they probably wish they had back. But
yeah. What do you think of the Colts draft?
Well, I was kind of looking at that today, too. And quite frankly, I hadn't heard of many of them. they got a linebacker from Georgia in the second round, is C.J. Allen. And, of course, then they got Deion Burke from
Oklahoma.
Who was a Purdue player, but he seemed to have stone hands at Purdue.
Yeah.
But I remember his second game at Oklahoma, he scored 4 touchdowns. Like that. There you go. But so we'll see if, you know, usually if you're drafted, you almost always make the team. But seventh round, you know, is obviously the one where you might not. But
yeah. And then obviously, the Hoosiers had a heck of a day or a heck of a draft from obviously their best season ever. I think they had 8 guys drafted.
Yeah, 7 or 8.
Yeah, 2 in the first day. with Mendoza and Omar Cooper, and then Elijah Surratt get drafted. Actually, had and they had, you know, the Jets took two guys. It took Omar and then D'Angelo Ponce.
The one stretch they thought was the running back. I think his name's Black or whatever. Third round to the 49ers. But I also heard Hasselbeck say that he was also regarded as the best pass blocking running back in the draft.
Yeah, I could see it. He's a truck.
Yeah. Well, yeah, IU could run. They could run the ball, you know, every time first down, it'd be second and four. And it was him. And then, you know, he obviously had a great line. So that was a big key to their season. They had two good running backs and a really good line. Mm-hmm. And the receiving corps was outstanding. The Becker kid's coming back, and he probably will be a first rounder next year.
Oh, easily. Yeah, at least if he puts a production he did in the back half of this last season, for sure.
I saw a mock draft today. It had him 18th or 19th overall. Wow. So,
yeah, I believe it. It's crazy.
Yeah, it really is. It's hard to say all that stuff. So. Yeah, you know, actually, Iowa and Washington both had 6 and 7 guys drafted. So I would never guess that. Yeah.
No, yeah.
Because Washington had a pretty mediocre year. Iowa's always 8-4. So. Yeah. That's just Iowa. So,
and then I saw that I believe now every single starter from Ohio State's championship team from 2 years ago has now been drafted.
Well, except for Smith, their best one of the bunch, he has to play another year of college.
Defense.
Oh, defense, yeah.
Yeah, their entire defense, starting defense from 2 years ago has been drafted, I'm pretty sure.
I think, after watching the college football playoff and then watching the early rounds of the NFL draft, I think you can easily say Indiana, Ohio State, Miami, and Notre Dame were the best four teams in the country last year. Notre Dame didn't make it because they lost, their first two games. But that Ohio State have four of the first 11 kids drafted. That's ridiculous. And
yeah, I think they're trying to be the first and never had 4 and 10, but they missed it by a pick.
And people couldn't believe Downs dropped to 11th. They had him slotted like a 7. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the rich just get richer.
They do. They really do. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. And actually, my trivia question is NFL draft related. It's kind of a couple parts. Let's see if I can get back to where I had it. Can you name me the NFL draft class that has produced the most Hall of Famers?
What year the draft class was?
All those players got drafted. Yes.
Okay. Well, we know it's not in the last 5 years because they're not eligible yet.
Yep.
I have a guess right off, but that's probably not right. So. Okay.
Yeah, I think it's according to the Pro Football Hall of Fame website. I believe it's 10 players. Yeah, according to the website, it's 10 players were drafted.
One clue. Were you born yet?
No.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. I was not.
So you want me to give that at the end of the show then?
We can do that. Yeah, it's fine. Yeah.
Or if you want to do it right now, my original – I got one original guess here.
Okay.
And it's just because of the quarterbacks, but my first thought was 1983. Because Elway, Marino, Kelly, but I don't know how the rest of the that's probably not it because you're just not saying, yeah, that's it.
That is incorrect, yes. That is incorrect, yeah. Okay. So we'll see if you chew on
give
it.
Give me a little time and I'll try to figure it out.
Yeah. All right. Anything else on the draft?
No, I didn't. I like you, I didn't pay a great deal of attention, so.
Yeah.
You know, and there wasn't the big quarterback. You know, a lot of them were wondering about this Ty Simpson from Alabama being drafted in the first round. Yeah. Great situation for him. He gets to sit for a year or two behind Stafford. Yeah. But Stafford is probably like, why didn't you go get me one guy? You know, we're this close to going to the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Get me that one guy.
Yeah. And it seemed like even McVay wasn't. At least his reaction is like he was super thrilled with
the
pick, but we'll see.
Yeah. they were so close to going last year.
Yeah.
So they'll be fine. If they have Puka Nacua back, you know, he catches everything. So
yeah, outside of really Mendoza, the quarterback class was pretty
mundane.
Who was it? Say Simpson went, and then you had Klubnik from Clemson was drafted. Obviously, you had the kid from LSU went late. He was a Heisman hopeful coming into the year, and injury hurt that. But
Drew Aller from Penn State went to the Steelers.
Yeah,
but and then there's a running quarterback. I think his last name's Green from Arkansas went in like the sixth round.
Yeah, you're right.
There wasn't much, and next year's supposed to be pretty loaded.
Yeah, you got Arch Manning.
Yeah. Ryan Brown.
Yeah. Hopefully.
Yeah. So it's loaded.
Yeah. You been watching much of the NBA playoffs?
Yeah. I mean, they have three or four games on every night. I pay attention. The Pistons are a little bit in trouble. I mean, they're a number one seed and they're down 2-1.
Yep. On the road again tonight. Yeah.
Yeah. And Orlando was supposedly going to be, you know, a 3-4 type seed this year, and they were injured all year. So now they're finally healthy.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, I'm shocked at how good a pro Franz Wagner was. I was not that impressed with him at Michigan, but he's turned into be a really nice pro.
Yeah.
So that's an interesting one. Obviously, if you look at it, San Antonio and Oklahoma City might be dominating the NBA for the next 7 or 8 years, and they're both very young.
Mm-hmm.
And Oklahoma City gets another first round draft pick this year based off a lottery pick,
mm-hmm.
based off a trade with the Clippers from years ago, I think. And San Antonio, they've got that 7'5" monster in the middle, blocks every shot, and he gets every call too. You know, he's already getting a superstar treatment.
Yeah, I haven't watched much of the NBA, just period. But I was watching a little bit of their game yesterday. And I just haven't just paid attention, mostly because I'm just so locked into college basketball during basketball season. But just Wembanyama's skill set is unreal. Just to see a guy that big to cross up a guy, take a back step, fade away. it's so dumb. But
and like, if he averages four blocks, he alters another six, you know.
Exactly. So, yeah.
And they've got good young players. The Castle kid that was from Connecticut a couple years ago, he's a really good pro. De'Aaron Fox from Kentucky.
Yep.
So they're set for the future, and so is Oklahoma City.
Yeah. Santos also got Harper from Rutgers.
Oh,
from
last year. Yeah. And he's done really well.
Yeah.
Much better than Ace Bailey, his college teammate, who did okay. You know, like 12 points a game, something like that. But
yeah. I think it was Harper and Cass were the first players. I think it was like either in their first or second year, or maybe just under the age of like 21 to average 25 in a playoff, or to score 25 the same game since like it might have been like Russ and KD or something. It was some weird stat. Like it's been going up and. I had a long time.
Yeah. Unfortunately, a lot of the playoffs playoff, the stars are hurt. You got Durant that's been hurt for Houston. The Lakers not only lost Luka, they lost Austin Reeves, who averaged 25 points a game. I mean, you know, between the two of them, they averaged 57 a game. And Luka produced the most points this year in the history of the NBA when you count his assists, and some of them were 3-point assists. But he himself accounted for over 58 points a game.
Goodness.
And yet, you know, LeBron's kind of turned the clock back a little bit here in the playoffs and playing really well. So that's kind of a shocker because I think everybody had the Lakers getting swept without their two leading scorers.
Right.
But there's other guys hurt too.
He had a guy for Minnesota, Dante DiVincenzo from formerly Villanova. He tore his Achilles. And if you look at the last, 2 years, you had Dante DiVincenzo, you had Tyrese Halliburton, you had Jason Tatum, and Damian Lillard all tear their Achilles and they all wear number zero. Just something that's really bizarre. Yeah.
That something is interesting.
Yeah. I saw that yesterday when they announced it. Yeah. Cause then actually, cause of, I think in his absence, the big story with Minnesota was Io DeSumo, played for the Bulls and obviously was a star at Illinois, just went off in their game. And played really, really, really well on Saturday night.
I think he had, was it 46?
I'm pulling up right now.
43, 46, something like that. Of course, Ant-Man's hurt too now. He hurt his knee, and he's out a few games.
Yeah. DeSumo had 43 points in 42 minutes, went 5 of 5 from 3, 13 of 17 from the field.
I never considered him a good three-point shooter in college. He was okay.
Right. Yeah. He was you'd get down the hill and could score on you.
Yeah, he got buckets, but I never considered him as a marksman by any means. Who else? Aaron Gordon for the Denver's been kind of hurting. Yeah. Wemby even missed a game. Embiid, they tried to come back and that one is a disaster. I mean, he put up good numbers, but he couldn't guard anybody, so.
Yeah. Wemby.
There'll probably be more injuries.
Wemby's fall is that was a nasty fall. Like when his head literally bounced off the floor. I'm not surprised he got a concussion. And he even went down because I was watching the game yesterday. He went down briefly for a second where his legs are 6 feet long. So it's not surprised that his legs twisted, they do, but his leg twisted really weird, but he ended up being fine. Once he got up, he kind of turn on it.
It looks like to me it's going to be between Oklahoma City and San Antonio in the West. I thought the Nuggets could compete, but they're down 3-1
and on the road.
And then you almost have to think Boston's now the prohibitive favorite in the East now that Tatum's back and seems to be back in groove. So they have some good shooters.
Yeah, I was watching some of the Cavs Raptors game yesterday, and obviously Cavs have Harden, which it shows how much I pay attention to the NBA. I totally forgot Harden is even on the Cavs. But like with him, Donovan Mitchell, and that kind of scoring punch, they had a big lead late in the fourth and blew it up in Toronto. So now that game that's now tied 2-2, and they were.
Mm-hmm.
Was Cleveland the one seed last year when the Pacers upset them?
They were.
I think it's unfortunately for ESPN, we won't have a Boston Knicks Eastern Conference Finals like they probably won just because of the way they're seated. But that would definitely draw tons of ratings. But Boston's the team out of the East. That's the team to beat.
I agree. Yeah, in Toronto, shot 32% yesterday. He said it was the third worst shooting performance in a victory in NBA playoff history. So. Or at least maybe not in the early 50s, but let's just say in the modern day NBA.
Yeah.
It's 30 or 40 years. So,
yeah.
Yeah. That was interesting.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Kind of sticking with the basketball theme, too. I guess I've, since the last time, I guess the Tanner Jamin show was recorded in the college world, the transfer portal is now officially closed. Not sure how much you've paid attention to the players coming and going in and out of the portal. Obviously, our standpoint, Purdue, we were very lucky and really kind of an anomaly in today's world of having zero scholarship players transfer out. They did a walk-on, Aaron, to Ball State, which I think he'll do really well there. Hopefully he does. It kind of went hot and heavy, and then I think the portal closed last Monday. And I thought you'd still see things go pretty crazy, but I feel like it's really slowed down. I think part of that has to do with this whole 5-on-5 rule, which people who aren't caught up on that, the NCAA is proposing a rule where players have, once they come out of high school, they have 5 years to play. They have 5 years to play five seasons, essentially. So kind of essentially limiting the need for a red shirt. And the thought was if they enact that, they would be grandfathering in a bunch of these guys who just graduated and are out of eligibility, which would just be I mean, it's already chaotic enough, but the fact that you've introduced thousands of more players, but just before we start recording it, it came out that they probably aren't going to do that, which I think is good.
Me too.
As much as I'd like to have Fletcher Lawyer back on Purdue another year, but that won't happen. But yeah, have you been paying attention much to the portal since
pre-season? Yeah, off and on. Obviously, the schools that people are highest on as far as what they received in the portal were Louisville, because they got two legitimate college stars.
And
Texas, I guess, made a good haul. Yeah, Indiana obviously got a guy.
Yeah, Texas has essentially turned over their entire starting five outside of their big man.
Indiana, and you knew Indiana would have a good haul because they literally only have one kid coming back.
Yeah, and he wasn't a starter by any means. So it's like
And
he had all the money and unlimited starter minutes to offer. So
You know, they did get some good players. The kid from Alabama they got is going to be a real help. And Marcus Burton, ex Mr. Basketball from played at Notre Dame. They got a kid from Duke, and just because he came from Duke, you assume he's good.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah, didn't see for much, but he was a top 40 kid in high school, and he came out of high school as a really good shooter, but he has not proven it at Duke. But you wonder if that's just maybe just from a lack of consistent playing time. So obviously he should be, because they haven't really picked up much since outside of their starting five, from what So you wonder if maybe they were waiting to see what this whole rule was. But I think honestly, a lot of all these teams is a lot of guys, people going to the Europe route for some of these bench guys that, you know, taking a flyer off. I mean, I know Illinois did that last year and for a couple guys and it didn't work out. But that's one team that they're not going to show up on a top portal class because they only got like one or two guys. But Illinois, the fact that they were able to retain all their guys that they outside of the guys who are going pro and graduating, but they held on to a lot of their core from a Final Four team. So as much as I hate to say it, they're going to be a Final Four heavy favorite going into next year.
I did see that Stojakovic put his name in the NBA draft. With the ability to come back. I doubt if he got drafted, because he's kind of slight of frame, very good college basketball player. I wouldn't call him an exceptional shooter, though, like his dad is an all-time shooter. But he got to the foul line. I mean, he's a good player. And they, of course, the Avichik brothers. And Michigan went and got Tennessee starting center.
PJ Estrella, solid player.
USC supposedly loaded up pretty good, too.
Yeah, they picked up – who did they just pick up? They got a kid, the backup center from Connecticut, Eric Reby, which I know pretty recruited a little bit out of high school. And actually Josh sent a text to our group chat, speaking of college and the pros, where it says, the NIL era is flipping the NBA draft on its head. Only 71 players entered the 2026 NBA draft per the NBA, down from 106 last year and a peak of 263 in 2021.
Yeah.
So
I heard on Sirius today when I was driving somewhere, and they were talking about the NIL and the effects it has on these 18 to 22-year-old kids. And the guy made a great point. He said some of these kids will make more money as 20-year-olds than they will when they're 30, 35, 40, well into their careers. Mm-hmm. And it's just it's a difficult thing for kids to make this much money when once they're out, we always think, well, they can save it and all this stuff, but this might be their highest earning potentials of their entire lives is when they're before they really know what they're getting.
Yeah.
So
who's the Notre Dame's quarterback who's on the Colts now?
Riley Leonard.
He had the comment where he was making more at Notre Dame last year than he was, or 2 years ago, I guess, than he was for the Colts this last year.
Right.
It's true. You're hearing some of the numbers are being thrown out, especially for big men. I think it's just funny to see the market kind of react to whatever's going on. Like obviously Michigan wins with a big lineup, and then everybody's trying to go out and recreate exactly what Michigan did. Which is like putting premiums on big guys, where you're seeing, guys who were just really average, maybe average 10 points a game, and you know, maybe a crappy conference, and you're hearing, which who knows what's even true, but you're hearing offers of, you know, $4 or $5 million for a guy who was probably a backup on your team last year if he was on that same roster.
Right. Yeah, it's crazy. And how do you tell your players, guys that maybe have been on your program 2 years, 3 years, going into their fourth year, that they're going to make this much money, and you're going to bring somebody in, it's going to make three times as much money when you know you're supposedly building a culture.
Yeah, I think that's why you've seen a lot of these schools that are doing the total rebuilds year in, year out, because that's, I mean, I think Texas is a great example. And we saw a kid in like where they had guys, and if they want to come back, they're probably going to make a certain amount, but then they're bringing in these guys and probably paying them a lot more, which is why you see guys like Cam Heidi transfer again, ending up in South Carolina. It's tough. I think it's probably the reason why, I'm guessing, Painter hasn't delved into those waters as much as other coaches, is probably because it's probably exactly what you said. If he promised these guys who have stuck with him to he wants to honor their commitment, but it's tough to do that when you're overpaying a guy.
Yeah.
Same position who hasn't even played a second.
Yeah. And it's hard to over recruit on kids that have been waiting patiently for their chance.
Yeah.
And, you know, Purdue's a great example. We don't know what they're going to be next year. You know, everybody's going to have a much bigger role than they had, and some might excel at it and maybe they won't, but you can't just pigeonhole that Jakari Harris is always going to be a 5-point guy.
Right.
You know, with 35 minutes a game, maybe he's a 15-point guy and play great defense. So,
And I think that's part of the reason why Purdue had the retention they did, because you're losing four starters. And CJ Cox is a returning starter. So it's like, there's the unknown of like, hey, this is, I mean, outside of probably Omar Myers, your starting point guard, like there's really no guaranteed spots there. So it's a lot of like, hey, might as well come back and try and do it. Yeah. Versus some of these other schools that have more defined things. But it's going to be interesting. Obviously, you see the guys on the message boards, they're saying we need to go out and just recruit a whole new team every single year, because that's the way you're going to win a championship. But then those are the same guys who are, you know, so thankful in February that this team stuck around because they had to win or whatever. So it's interesting. I think there's no right or wrong way to do it right now, because I think we're seeing, you know, UConn was a good example. They were a team that, you know, a couple years ago, they built their team from high school recruiting and, you know, plugged and placed a couple of transfers here and there, like Cam Spencer. But then obviously you had Michigan this year, who their whole starting five essentially was a new team. I mean, it obviously comes down to coaching. I mean, we've seen all these, I mean, we saw it with Kentucky and Louisville this last year, where it's like they spent the most money and $22 million rosters, and they were, you know, final four picks. And then they kind of had, by their standards, not great years for one reason or another.
You're right. And in a backward way, this could help Purdue too. I mean, they have one of their best recruiting classes under Painter, supposedly, coming in now.
On paper.
And they think on paper, even next year,
could be
crazy, because a lot of these big majors that we always had to compete with are no longer going after high school kids.
Yeah, until maybe the last second.
Right. So it's pure retention then. If you get them and they're not quite ready, you know, you get the number 38 kid. You know he's got potential.
Yeah.
You know, you just got to figure out how to keep them.
We talked about the draft. Yeah, the deadline to withdraw for guys who – like a Stojakovic and some of these other guys. There's a kid from Iowa State who's going into the portal, but also going through the draft, which I think I can't imagine he doesn't get drafted as a guy with his size and who's an elite shooter. I don't know how you find a spot, but he also could probably make $8 million at Kentucky or Florida next year. But the deadline to withdraw is May 27th. But the interesting deadline is June 13th, which is for international prospects, which I didn't think would be a note that I would even make 2 years ago. But with the way that we're having all these international guys now come to college basketball, whether they're 18 or now even 22, 23 year olds, it's interesting to see, because, you know, the portal's closed out, guys can still commit and all that. The recruiting will go well into the summer, as we saw as Purdue fans last year with the addition of Omar Meyer late in the year. And, but yeah, it's going to be interesting.
Yeah. And that, you know, Illinois was probably one of the leaders in grabbing that foreign talent.
Oh, yeah.
And I just saw today, I can't think where he went. His brother's all-star forward for the Utah Jazz, Lori, I can't pronounce it. Yeah, his brother just signed with somebody today.
Is that his brother?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah, the kid went to, he's going to Arkansas.
Yeah, so yeah, he is. Arkansas's now got the number one ranked recruiting class.
In yeah.
So yeah. That's Calipari too. I mean, you know,
yeah,
love him or hate him, he's always going to get players.
Yeah, yeah, that was a kid who he played high school basketball in Arizona, and then he went to Finland and mm-hmm. played professionally. But yeah, he is 6'10", can shoot mm-hmm. it. I suppose there's talks of him being kind of a bit of a head case, but that was also when he was in high school, which high school kid isn't, especially when you're at the level that those guys are at.
Absolutely.
But yeah, he was one that they thought he might go into the draft, but yeah, but if he went to college, he was going to make a lot of money. And yeah, I saw that. I think Arkansas is the only school he really, truly, really visited because he couldn't visit when he was overseas. But yeah, I watched a little bit of him just from his tape. And then I watched him at the Nike Pro Summit, whatever that was, a couple weekends ago. And he's the real deal.
Yeah. So who knows, you know, like, the Wagler kid that played for Illinois last year, who knew he was going to be what he was, right?
So, yeah. Yeah. It came out of nowhere. And
right. So there'd be some of those guys too. So,
yeah. And moving on, we obviously have baseball season's going hot and heavy. I'm not sure how much you've watched. I have not been paying attention to much, but I did make another call to the bullpen. To our good friend of the show, Aaron Lynch, on my thoughts for his thoughts on the White Sox.
Yeah. Well, they got the kid tied for the lead in home runs.
Yeah, he is incredible. It's home run or strikeout. But it's he's been definitely the highlight of the season, for whatever you can call that, because it's been a pretty pitiful season so far. But
yeah. The things I wrote down about baseball is the Braves are already 6.5 games up in their division, which is crazy this early. Yeah. All five NL Central teams are above 500 at this point. Mm-hmm. That's not going to last.
No. Well, there was a stat. It was last week, but there was more NL Central teams above 500, which were all of them, than there were AL teams above 500, period, at one point last week. So
yeah. And then the Phillies, Mets, Astros, and Blue Jays are all off to horrible starts.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Blue Jays were one out away from winning the World Series last year. So, and then the Sacramento A's, Oakland A's, Las Vegas A's, they're winning their division.
Wow. Yeah.
Which I think Tanner predicted on the Tan and J-Man show for some stupid reason. But, He ought to put a picture of it right now, but I think they're winning it like 15-13.
Yeah.
So it's not like they're dominating, but
yeah.
But
big thing for the White Sox is I guess the thing that's interesting right now is they did bring up the Schultz kid, the pitcher. He's 6'10".
Oh yeah, I saw that.
So obviously he's getting all the Randy Johnson comps just because of his size. You know, Schultz, he had 8 strikeouts in his second start. Was a no decision. This is from Aaron Lynch, so I'm stealing his words specifically. But he said he's probably gonna pass Chris Sale and Crochet this week in most strikeouts in his first 3 starts, which would be 21. He's 6'10" lefty, and he was our top pitching prospect. And he got called up about 2 weeks ago, so it's been the talk of the South Side.
Well, you know, they're obviously much better than they were last year, and they were way better last year than they were the year before. So they're coming.
Yeah. Which also noticed that the outfield is the worst and probably the worst in modern day baseball.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah. So other than that, I there's a couple players. I'm a Mike Trout fan. I see has 9 homers, but he's only hitting 230. He's so good a few years ago, and injuries have kind of derailed him.
Yeah.
And I do follow the Cubs. And I know they,
they've been hot.
But they've lost the last two, and they had to go to the Dodgers. Now they got to go to the Padres, and they're down a bunch of pitching. So they just kind of got to stay in the hunt for a while. Yeah.
I saw the tweet. I didn't look at it too much, but it was a graphic of all their pitchers that were on the DL, and it was or on the injured list, and it was a lengthy list. Yeah.
Yeah, so they start out with a pretty easy schedule, but I thought the Mets and Phillies would be tough series, and they're both just – well, they're 9 and 19.
Yeah.
Both teams, so hard telling. It's still early.
Yeah, you know, super early.
Big market teams will make their push for a player here. I always say wait to the first 100 games, and if you're like 55 and 45, you go for it, and if you're 45 and 55, you sell.
Yeah. So, absolutely. Yeah. One thing we need to still make sure we do, I know the Tanner always says want to get educated. So I do have the on this day. Pull that up here. All right. On this day in sports history for April 27th. In 1903, first Highlander, which is Yankee, shut out Philadelphia A's, win 6-0 back in the day.
There you go.
Try to see what's – 1929, Ryder Cup. Great Britain defeats the U.S. 7-5 in bitterly cold and snowy conditions. Can't imagine golfing those conditions in 1929.
Yeah, that'd be tough.
Let's see here. Some cricket for the J-Man. A lot of cricket. That is a lot of cricket on here. 1996, Romanian gymnast and five-time Olympic gold medalist Nadia. I'm not even going to try and pronounce that last name.
Komenich.
Yes. Weds American gymnast Bart Connor in Bucharest, Romania.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
She was big in the 70s.
Yeah, there's not a lot. Yeah, not 1930, White Sox first baseman Bud Clancy didn't handle the ball at all in nine inning game versus St. Louis Browns. Yeah, there's not a lot going on here.
Yeah.
Slow day in April.
Yeah.
Was it 1920? Sweden takes the first figure skating double at the Antwerp Olympics when Gillis Gofström wins his first of three consecutive men's gold medals. Magda Julin earlier wins the women's singles event. Talk of the town back then.
you know it's a tough month when you're going figure skating in
cricket. I realize Olympics happened this early and Summer Olympics happened this early back then, but you got to do what you got to do back then.
Yeah. So,
anything else you wanted to cover? Much.
Well, I have a I forget what the segment's called, but you list one through four.
Blind rankings, yes.
Blind rankings, okay. I have put down five coaches of different sports down, and I thought you could rank them in likability factor. For Evan Webb. It's going to start with Brian Kelly.
Man.
One being the most like, one being the one you least like the most, five being the one that's you at most least acceptable. Yeah.
Oh, man. I obviously don't know who this is, but I have a hard time not putting Brian Kelly number one.
Yeah,
he's the guy. Obviously, when he went to LSU, he was out of my life a little more
than
normal, but the fact that he was just at Notre Dame for as long as he was, and obviously, you know, Purdue played them for a while, but just being in Indiana, having to always hear about them and just seeing his antics. And then obviously once he left, Notre Dame fans kind of wised up to what a jerk he really was. I think I'm going to put him at number one just because also just like, it's one thing just, you know, I'll hate coaches for, you know, if they just beat my team repeatedly, it's one thing. But when you're just a jerk off the field or court, that kind of takes you to a whole nother level. And that's definitely Brian Kelly for me. So I think I'm going to put a one.
Okay. Kurt Cignetti.
Gosh dang. This is a guy. This is a guy who is a good example of that. Obviously, he's only 2 years in. But man, he's made my life miserable for 2 years. Yes, he has. But it's like, and I was kind of thinking about this. I don't know if I talked about it on the world famous Boiler Breakdown podcast or not. Where it's like, and it's just maybe just the way the portal has gone, but it's like outside of, you know, just the uniform, I didn't hate that team just because.
I know. Like, I agree.
It's, you know, as what's the old Seinfeld joke, you're cheering for laundry. So at that point, I was just hating the laundry that they're
right.
Wearing. Right. But I mean, like they weren't jerks, and also they were only there for a year or two. So it's not like you got to grow and hate them like you could previous years. But yeah, it still was miserable. I'll put them at 3. Hate them, but it's there's a lot of respect there though.
He's absolutely a fantastic coach. And I thought he was a huge jerk the first year. And then this year, I didn't think he was. I thought he ran it up on people last year. I mean, they were playing the bucket game, and Purdue had kids quitting all over the place. And Ryan Walters, and he ran a fake punt up 49-0.
Yeah.
And I thought, what a jerk. But this year, I didn't think he was near that bad. And he just had a great team.
Yeah. I think part of it, I don't know, he may have even said it too, like where he's like, part of it, he was just trying to just light a fire into the fan base of like can be that. And went to, obviously then they let their plane do the talking this year.
Yeah.
Last year, I guess.
And I mean, they had nearly a full house at their spring game. I mean, who does that outside of, you know, Tennessee and Alabama? And
that's Ohio ridiculous. State, maybe, yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
All right. How about Bill Belichick?
I didn't hate him as much as other people did. Yeah. Mostly because I wasn't a Colts fan. So I enjoyed me being the jerk that I am, enjoyed seeing Colts fans mad at whenever they won. But do I hate him more than Cignetti? I think I do. So I think I have to put him at 2, which is, I think I really screwed up this list.
All right. How about Dan Hurley?
That's one that, like, prior to, I don't know what it was, maybe just because I was cheering for him against Illinois. Sorry, yeah. G-man. Where he would have been a lot higher. But he's just he's a really good coach. I like how he actually runs his program. The fact that he's what, in terms of his program, love for Purdue to get to, obviously, in 2 national championships would be incredible. But just from a, you know, retaining guys, getting good talent, and kind of plugging and play with your transfer as you need to. So I'll put him at 4.
Okay. Well, he's obvious. He's in a way, he's like Cignetti. You just have to salute him because they obviously
I've seen a lot of comps to even a Bobby Knight, especially from the emotional outrage he has at certain things.
But he acts terrible on the court.
Oh yeah.
But he obviously is a great basketball coach.
Yeah.
And then I'll finish it up with probably would put him at 5 anyway. Tom Izzo.
Yeah. Yeah, I might put him a little higher, maybe, just because of with the issues with this program over the years, which he's been there for so long. It's hard to, you know, he's got a lot of baggage with this program, but at the same time, there's that respect there. If he's just a really great coach and by all means does things above board for the most part, we'll see. Remains to be seen, but yeah, he's a. It's hard to argue his legacy in college basketball.
Yeah, a lot of stuff gets pushed under the rug on Izzo. You know, all the different kids have been accused of things and
domestic violence and whatnot.
I will say, you know, the same Michigan State team in 2000. If you hadn't seen college basketball in 25 years and then you saw them play this year, they play the same way.
Yeah,
I mean, they rebound the heck out of the ball. They don't shoot all that great. But they rebound the heck out of the ball, and, you know, if the other team does score, they throw it and they get it down there in about 1.2 seconds, and they always have a good point guard, it seems like. Mm-hmm. So, And yep. They have big men that are 6'9" and just built. Xavier Tillman and
yeah,
Brendan Dawson. I mean, you can name
yeah
the same guy every year.
Yeah,
so
you can rebound the ball. It's physical. Yeah, it's
not and Izzo's hard. Over there whining.
Yep, getting the yep. call. Yep, obviously yeah. Yeah. Working the refs, getting the calls. Yep, that was good. That was a really good list. I'm not sure if I honestly. Trying to think, I might move Hurley above Cignetti just because of he's been around longer, so I can hate him a little more. But that's tough just because of where Cignetti coaches. That was a good list. Yeah, I'm not sure if I had to re-rank or not. But I definitely know Kelly's definitely number one. That's
also consider putting Brad Underwood in for the J-Man factor.
Oof, yeah,
but
that'll be interesting.
Yeah, and. And Charlie Weiss. So I had some other names.
That's
up
a good
too.
One. That's a good one. Yeah.
Yeah.
I had this conversation with one of my sales reps just like 2 weeks ago. He was like, "So what coaches do you like?" Because yeah. I was just going off on all these coaches, but that's yeah. a good list. I did have another note. This is in the realm where the J-Man never talk about. I know you're super locked into English Premier League soccer, right?
Oh, who isn't?
Yeah. Are you at all aware of what's going on with the Tottenham Hotspurs?
I am not.
Yeah. So for those who don't know, and you're aware with like European soccer, like relegation and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So yeah, the top every year, the bottom three teams in any division get relegated to the league below, and the top three of the one below get moved up. Of course, it's my team, Tottenham. They're one of the they're based in London, so they're one of the biggest teams, one of the biggest markets. They have the third biggest stadium in all of the Premier League. They are currently, if the season ended today, they have four games left. They would be relegated for the first time ever. They've never won the Premier League, which has been around since like 92. But it got me thinking, like, what team, like NFL team, like for the fact that just given their size, their marketability, they're usually always kind of in the hunt. They've never won the Premier League, but they're always kind of usually in that top half. But they're on the verge of being relegated, and it'd be massively embarrassing for the team yeah. to really with that much money. And I was thinking, and I honestly thought, like, given when the Premier League started, like in the 90s, like you could easily say, I was like, the Chicago Bears would be one. Haven't won anything since then. Huge market, but have been close a couple times to either in the playoffs or the Super Bowl, but have never gotten it done. I was trying to make that comparative, and I think that's who I landed on was the Bears.
I can see that. Maybe Dallas Cowboys, not Dallas quite as Cowboys, big a market, yeah. but my goodness,
yeah.
they haven't done squat in 35 years. So
yeah. So if you like seeing teams squirm, tune into that, because they've got like four games left, and they're rise of right now they're on the verge of relegation, which is like wild. Considering their stadium holds like 62,000 people, that place will be empty next year if that's the case.
Well, I almost gave you for a ranking list sporting achievements of Tan and J-Man both, but I couldn't come up with one.
Well, perfect. Well, yeah. Before we get out of here, we got a couple minutes. We'll make sure we hit the ad reads. Let the Tan J-Man Show pay some bills. Forgot to mention, Tan J-Man Show is also brought to you by Proformer Print 2 Promo Group. With over 50 years of combined experience in promotional products and commercial print, strive for fast and efficient response to all your print needs. And you look no further. Let them be your one source print and promotional company. You can call Barbara Van Weinsberg at 574-210-3815 or email barbara.vanweisberg@proformer.com. We also have Blue River Digital is a full-service marketing agency that helps businesses simplify marketing and grow with intention. Their focus is systems, strategies, and long-term results, not hype or one-off tactics. They offer digital marketing, website development, graphic design, printing and direct mail, signature and vehicle graphics, corporate apparel and promotional items, and AI and automations. Work with small, medium, and large businesses spanning across the United States with a strong presence in Northern Indiana. Talk to them today at 260-248-2749 and see how they can help you with your digital marketing. And then last but not least, we didn't do a J-Man's Book of Prediction of the Week, so J-Man's not here, but that's brought to you by Travis Watchering. Insurance multi-line agent for Indiana Farmer Insurance, specializing in home, auto, life, and renter's insurance. Call Travis at 219-869-4561.
And I know, I don't know if you have it, but Thad Mooney.
I do not. Yeah, I don't have Thad's.
Mooney Woodcrafting.
Yep.
I'll make sure Tanner double mentions that next week. But he's got a lot of neat things if you need for Father's Day coming up.
He always chimes in too on whether it's Tanner James or the Boiler Breakdown. So we appreciate that and all his support. Well, we did it, Eric. We made it the full hour.
We did.
Appreciate you helping me out today. I said, no, it's a tough time of year. I'm not sure how Tan and J-Man always do it week in and week out. But hope to have them back next week. Make sure you follow, like, and subscribe on all platforms. And they will be back next week. And Eric, appreciate it. And we'll see you next time.
All right. Thanks, Evan.